2000, year 2000 was a leap year. It's divisible by 4, it was divisible by 100, and it was divisible by 400. If you, any of you were alive in 1900, which should have been a leap year, it was not, because it was divisible by 100, but not by 400. If any of us are alive at the year 2100, it will not be a leap year. So you can let me know if that's indeed the case when the time comes. I didn't know all that. I knew it wasn't exactly 0.25, and that one extra day didn't quite fix it, but that's how it supposedly is fixed. Very few people see that occur. So that's a solar calendar. Then there's a lunar calendar. Lunar calendars are calendars that are based solely on the phases of the moon. Because the lunar year at 354 days is shorter than our 365-day year, months on the lunar calendar drift through the seasons. The Muslims use a lunar calendar, and their big holiday, or whatever they call it, Ramadan, will drift through our calendar because their calendar is, whatever this was, 10 or 15 days shorter. So it kind of drifts through there from year to year. Then there's a fourth type of calendar, a combination of the lunar solar calendar. And these are calendars that have, now I know this is an important word here, the weekly cycles and the months are based on movements of the moon. And the year is anchored to the sun. Now the question that you have is, how can you tie a week to the movement of the moon? Now this is the type of year that is referred to in the Bible. It's called the biblical year, or sometime maybe the Hebrew year, or the lunar solar year. Here's how it's tied to the Bible. The week is tied to the movement of the moon. Let me back up and just show you something here. We have holidays. Some of our holidays are on a particular day of the month. Name me one. Christmas. Christmas is December 25th. July the 4th is on July the 4th, amazingly. It is. Every year, Valentine's Day, February the 14th. So on one year, the 4th of July may be on Wednesday. The next year, that holiday may not be on Wednesday. It may be on Thursday or whatever. Right? We understand that. Other holidays, like Thanksgiving, is always on what? Thursday. The fourth Thursday in November or something like that. Okay? Voting Day is not a holiday, but it is always on the first Tuesday following the first Monday in November. So these things vary on what day of the week they're on. The Jews had Sabbaths, and the first day, we saw this in the earlier chapters in Exodus actually, God said, this is the beginning of the year for you. This is the beginning of time. This is the beginning of your months for you. Here, that particular day they were talking. He said, you count 14 days, and that starts your Passover, or the Day of Unleavened Bread, or whatever it was. But their first Sabbath was on the 15th of the month. Now you can go, and the first day of every month is the new moon. So there's the tie. The first day of every month in the Jewish calendar, the old Jewish calendar, was on the first day of the month was on a full moon. Then they counted 7 days. The 8th was the Sabbath. 7 more days, the 15th is the Sabbath. 7 more days, the 22nd Sabbath. 7 more days, the 29th is the Sabbath. So you see how their weeks are tied to the moon. Okay, now I've got a copy of a lunar solar calendar with feast days, of the Jewish feast days. And I'll have them both laying down here. If you want to come up after church and look at them, you can. But every month in this calendar, the first is on Saturday. Every month. Ours is not that way. Every month, the new moon signals the first of the month. So the Sabbaths are always 8, 15, 22, 29. Now they correct that because it's the days of the month will start getting off. They correct that with occasionally, see the lunar month is 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, whatever it was. So you're starting to get off. Occasionally they have a 30th day in the month. And occasionally they correct it even more by tying it to the sun. Now you can see that kind of year, if you overlaid it with our calendar, the Sabbaths would not always line up on the same week day as our calendar. This month they may be on Tuesdays. Another month they may be on Thursdays. Because once they got to the Sabbaths on the 29th, you might have a 30 day and you may not, but then you have a new moon. So you're back at day one. Now that may be harder to understand without looking at diagrams, etc. But this is the calendar, and they have other things in the law with different kinds of Sabbath days, every 50 days and every 50 years, those kind of things that God instituted, that they worked into this. This was a very complex calendar that I'm not sure about this, but I don't know that they had the ability to write these calendars out years in advance. Maybe so. I don't know. But they had their calendar. Now that's not the calendar that the Jews use today. We'll see why that is in a little bit. But that is the lunar solar calendar that you see of the last type down there. There is no seasonal drift, and with a strictly lunar calendar, as with a strictly lunar calendar. Now, the type of calendars that were put together, you see I've got first one is a pre-Julian. This Julian is Julius Caesar. The calendars that the Romans had, and there may have been calendars, you know, other type of calendars that were in the works, I don't know. But this calendar, I'm going to use it because it relates to Jerusalem and the time when Jesus was living. The pre-Julian calendar was a calendar that the Romans used, sometimes called the Roman calendar or the Republic calendar. They had this calendar. It had 8 days in a week. And the calendar, according to what I read, was just a mess. It had to be adjusted over and over and over again, and the thing just was a nightmare to try to use. Well, in 45 B.C., Julius Caesar commissioned a scientist or somebody to fix it and to try to make things better. And they did. In 45 B.C., they converted to the Julian calendar. That particular year, in order to change everything and mesh everything together without losing days and those types of things, they had to have a one-time year of 445 days. Okay, it was called the Year of Confusion. Okay. So at that time, they started using the Julian calendar. The Julian calendar originally had 8-day weeks as well. And it is this calendar that was in use, that the Romans were using, in use at the time Christ lived on earth. Okay? The Hebrews had this calendar, a religious calendar that they used, and alongside it, they had this Julian calendar. Now, when we read in the New Testament, that on the first day of the week, Mary came to the tomb. Is that the Julian calendar or the Hebrew calendar? I don't know. I assume that it's the Hebrew calendar, but I don't know that. I can see where that there would, if somebody's studying time in the New Testament, those things might need to be considered as to which, if how widespread the use of that Julian calendar was, but I don't know. Then we had the Gregorian calendar. This calendar was authorized by Pope Gregory the 13th in 1582. Okay, so this is the calendar that we use pretty much, the Gregorian calendar. It wasn't accepted and or in use pretty much worldwide until 1926. That's amazing to me. If I remember my dates right, the United States sort of authorized it in 1757, which was before there was the United States, but it was during that time frame. So you see how, the point I want to make is you see how the calendars have been in flux. You can imagine what an eight-day week would do to us trying to translate that into our calendar. So these things are there. They're the history of timekeeping, the history of calendars in the world in which we live. Now, why am I saying all that? You were wondering that, weren't you? What does that have to do with the Sabbath? Okay, look on the back page there. We're going to look at this C point, and then we'll take up those other four points down there next week. I want to tell you, make some statements. The things that I have wondered about or things that I have observed or things that I know from the scriptures about people. The first one is this. Human beings gravitate toward a works-centered salvation. Now, I'm saying these because I want you to keep these things in your mind as we look at the Sabbath and whether or not we are under obligation to keep it and what that looks like. But one thing I want you to know, human beings want a work-centered salvation. They want that. They want to be able to do something objective, to do something definable that they can do that will please God and that God will let them into heaven. You can see that in third world cultures by people crawling on their knees across glass or fire or coals or whatever, trying to appease a God. You can see that in our culture, in Jehovah's Witnesses, that do certain things and they have to meet certain quotas and these type of things in order that they just might earn enough brownie points with God that God will let them be one of the 144,000, whatever the situation is. You can see it in lots of groups. In fact, supposedly, Christianity, and I say supposedly because everything within Christianity is not this way, is the only religion that salvation is based upon grace, not works. Human beings want something that they can do to please God. Keep that thought in mind. The second thought is this. We don't like gray things. We want things to be black and white. If I want to know what's right or wrong, I don't need the edges to be fuzzy. I need to know exactly. Part of that's because I'm wanting to crowd the fence, right? I want to get just as close to wrong as I can get without doing wrong. Years ago, I read a study that a psychologist did or somebody did. They took this playground at school. I don't know if they did it just one or several times. I assume it was several different places. This playground where younger kids, 10 or 12 years old or whatever, played, had a fence around it. And the kids ran and jumped and did all these things and kicked balls and stuff all over this playground. Well, they wanted to see the effects that no boundaries had on our behavior. So they took all the fences down. And now you don't know if the fence was here or if it was there or if it was there. And the result that they found was this, that the kids, first of all, were not near as active as they were before. And they gave the kids instructions, don't get out of the playground. And they tended to huddle more towards the middle of the playground where they knew it was safe. And they more subdued, didn't venture out as far. The idea was because they didn't know where the boundaries were. We don't like gray things. We want things to be black and white. But God hasn't made everything in our lives that way. It took me, and he didn't intend to make everything black and white, I don't think. It took me 15 or 20 years of my adult life to realize that. I was trying to find this line. That on one side is black, the other side is white. I want you to think of things that God could have made black and white, but he didn't. When Jesus came and was crucified and buried and resurrected, and the new church began without his physical presence, the Jews and the disciples who were Jews, they've been in this Jewish culture doing these Jewish things that made all the boundaries very clear for you. And now they're Christians. And they would tend to do the same things that they had already done. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just perfectly natural. But they begin to be challenged by the scriptures that maybe this is no longer valid for us. Maybe this has been done away with. And they had a hard time with that. And God could have laid it out. He could have made it very clear. I want you to think of a couple instances where he didn't. Peter was told to go to who's the guy's house? Cornelius. And he didn't want to go. Because this guy's a Gentile. And so God shows him this clear line is not where he thought it was. You remember the vision that Peter had? Sheet comes down from heaven and it's on it all kinds of unclean things. God tells him, take and eat. He says, not me. In this case, God supernaturally showed him through a vision and a dream that this is different. Now, God may have, in that instance, showed him a clear line, and it was a different line than what he had been accustomed to, wasn't it? A few years later, a question comes up about circumcision. Should we require converts to be circumcised? In that case, God doesn't give anybody a vision. God doesn't write it on the wall. God doesn't do any of that. They have to get together at Jerusalem and hash it out among themselves what this means. Particularly, I don't like God doing things like that. I want Him to tell me, not me and you and four other guys figure it out. Because we just might be wrong. But that's the way God did it. That is the way He did it. I don't like how the books of the New Testament came to be. They were hashed out and argued and debated among people until they figured out what they should be. God could have just took one of each of the letters and laid it down in front of them and say, here they are. But He didn't. The Sabbath fits into these categories. People have been debating and arguing about the Sabbath ever since Jesus was resurrected. You're going to have to figure out for yourself what's right and what's not right. But here's my point for all these calendars and units of time and stuff. Here's this point. The 7-day week that you see in our calendar does not follow an unbroken pattern of seven days all the way back to creation. Okay? Lots of folks want it to be that way. They don't like this gray stuff. They want it to be black and white. And they want to believe, and this is not our calendar, but I'll kind of hold it up as if it is. They want to believe that yesterday was a multiple of seven from the day that God rested and looked at His creation and said, it's good. We want it to be a multiple of seven. So that if we want or are supposed to rest on that seventh day, we got the right one. Right? It is highly unlikely that that's the case. As a matter of fact, the odds are 1 out of 7. Right? The odds are 1 out of 7. Another thought to keep in mind as we look at the Sabbath. The Hebrew calendar, and that is this, that the Hebrews used at the time of Jesus and prior to that, in the time of the Exodus, or the shortly after in the wilderness when God instituted all these things, and they began to put together what God had said in order to have a visual means of how they were to, or when they were to worship. This Hebrew calendar that was used by the Jews for years, you cannot lay it on top of our calendar and it fit. Just can't do it. You cannot do it. It's not a chance in 1 in 7. You cannot do it. You may try to line up the Sabbath days on this month with the Sabbath days in some month of our calendar, and you look 1 month ahead, and they're off. You don't have to look but 1 month ahead, and they're off. It cannot be done. Remember that as you try to figure all this stuff out about the Sabbath. The likelihood, here's another one, of the fourth commandment Sabbath, whatever Jesus is talking or God is talking about here in Exodus, the likelihood of that day when they first started this, the likelihood of that day being on a Saturday in our calendar is 1 out of 7. It's 1 out of 7. Now, we're not, you may say, I'm not a Sabbath keeper, so it's a big deal. What about the Lord's Day? What about the first day of the week? What about today? The first day of the week, Sunday, the Lord's Day. The likelihood of today being a multiple of 7 from the day that Mary found the empty tomb in Jerusalem is 1 out of 7. We worship Easter, the resurrection on Sunday. I hate to tell you, that doesn't mean that Jesus was resurrected that a multiple of 7 many moons ago. Well, I wish it was that way, but I can't tell you. I can't tell you that it is. I can't prove to you that it is. Now, so how do we decide what we're going to do? This is going to be a gray area. Now, you can get on the internet, I promise you, because I've been there the last 2 weeks. And you can look up all these questions. Was the Sabbath our Saturday? Was the Lord's Day our Sunday? All these things. And you will find an endless supply of people, the vast majority of them, who are their point of their website or their article or whatever it is, the point of it is this, that we have got, you have got to find the right day. I'm telling you, that's the point of practically everyone that I saw. You have got to find the right day. Why is that? Because people don't like gray things. We've got to get it right, they say. Now, I don't know if you've thought that deeply about that question or not. I have. I mean, that's been a question that has bugged me for 20 years. How am I supposed to look at this? How do I know that this Saturday is the Sabbath? How do I know that this Sunday is the first day of the week? Bottom line is, I don't. That's one thing I've concluded. I don't know. I'll be so bold as to tell you, you don't either. Okay? If you can prove it to me, I don't have the time to listen. Okay? And I say that because it would take time. You got a long road ahead of you to prove that. So how do we look at it? Why do we worship on the Sunday of our calendar? Why do we worship on the first day of the week of our calendar? I'll tell you why. Because it's convenient. Okay? Why are we off work? Because that weekly cycle has been set for years and years and years. Why do the modern day Jews, as far as I know, I think this is true, and somebody may can correct me if I'm wrong, modern day Jews keep the Sabbath on what day on our calendar? Saturday, the seventh day. Why do they do that? I'll tell you why. Because it's convenient. That's it. Now, you can go back and you can see at Constantinople in 321 AD or whenever it was, forced the Hebrews to give this up. To get rid of it. Because they were trying to standardize timekeeping. And who's the guy's name? Heliel or something like that. I don't know if he was a rabbi or high priest or whatever. But he compromised with them, perhaps for his own neck or perhaps for whatever reason, maybe a bag of gold or something, and issued a thing, setting it aside. The Hebrews, the rabbis in the Jewish tradition today, acknowledge that the Saturday they're using is not, they don't know that's the right Sabbath, but they justify it this way. Because they're in their tradition, going back thousands of years, thousands or hundreds of years or whatever, part of their tradition was that if you lose sight of where the Sabbath was, if that situation ever comes up where you have lost the day, you don't know what day it was, then you start keeping one out of 7 days. You just start over where you're at. Now that's reasonable, I would think. Okay? And that's where they're at. That's where we're at. We don't know what's the sixth day. We don't know what's the seventh day. Now, if you believe that it is absolutely necessary that we get the right day, you've got a lot of work in front of you. Okay? If you conclude that the Sabbath has been abolished, Sabbath is done away with, and we're not under obligation to keep a particular day, then it doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter whether we've got the right day or not. Now, that's not a good reason to hold that view, but it does make it handy. Okay? All right? Now, I want to tell you those things because a lot of people will they want it to be a certain day if they've got to decide. And they just, okay, I'm just going to take it by faith. I think it's we got to, but I can't figure it out. So I'm just going to trust that God has set this modern day calendar in front of us and God has got it right. There are people who will say that. I think it's important. And I don't know how to figure it out, but just by blind faith, they won't use the word blind, just by faith, I think God wouldn't, here's what they will say, I think God would not leave us with a faulty calendar. That's blind faith. It's unreasonable faith. Now, I tell you all those things because perhaps some of those questions were in your mind. But let's get that out of the way. Okay? Let's get that question set aside. And next week, we're going to take this up again, and we're going to look at four things. You see them on your outline. We're going to look at reasons people give to keep the Sabbath, to make it a law to keep the Sabbath, and the variations in it. We're going to look at reasons people give to say we're not obligated to keep the Sabbath and look at variations in that. And we're going to look at issues on a secondary, what I call a secondary level that involve Sabbath keeping or one day in seven keeping. We'll look at those things like that. And we're going to talk about this. Avoid the challenge to avoid making new laws. Because if we conclude that we are under grace and this doesn't matter, but there are principles involved. It's a short step from that to a new law. We like black and white things. And when we figure out what I think I ought to do in a situation, by golly, I want you to do the same thing as well. Right? There I said by golly again. Let's pray.